Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome back to Starting Nine.
Bravo!
Episode 141.
I'm okay with going back to Houston. I'm okay with it.
Dallas. Your Nats pick not looking so great.
Is that true? Is that true? It just all depends on how you look at it. Caribous, I'm a glass half full guy.
The gain on Dallas's mic feels like it's turned so far that it's up my asshole.
Oh, come back a little bit. There we go.
My pick of Astros in six was mocked. After the Nats went up 2-0, Jay Hay had the stat. I've been saying it ever since. 25 times, a best of seven series had the road team go up. Or how is it phrased? It was like the
22 out of 25 teams.
Yes, had ever won after losing the first two games in a best of seven. Yeah, so the Astros were attempting to become the fourth. And on Tuesday night, they can do that. And I would love to see like how many of the three. I bet you all three did it in seven, right? Was there one that won in six?
No, I think they're all in seven.
Yeah. So the Astros have the chance to do this in seven games. By the way, Sean Casey on the podcast today. Woo!
Yes, the mayor's office, folks. You want to talk about a ball of energy, a ball of excitement, campfire stories galore? The mayor's office.
Yeah, so I've had this. We recorded this when we were at the All-Star game, and you know, we get the question all the time, like, "Oh, who's your favorite guest?" This and that. And I remember saying that like Sean Casey was in my top three for sure, but I was like, that might be recency bias because it was so funny. If you go back and listen to it, you're about to hear it in this particular podcast. It stands out. Like I will say months removed that the Sean Casey interview is one of my favorite of all. I don't think I've ever laughed as hard as I did during the Sean Casey interview.
And just to give you the kind of idea that Case is, his entire family was in the trailer with us. So a lot of times you feel like baseball guys can't open up or you can't say some of the stuff. You can't be yourself and still be that kind of funny or be that kind. Not the case. Not the case. He can peel back that layer. You know what I mean? He can peel back that onion when he needs to, or when he has the freedom to, but still a ton of fun with this family in the house. So that was what was really cool too, is watching his family kind of enjoy those stories along with us.
For sure. So stay tuned for that, Sean Casey, but back to this World Series, Dallas, your Nats. I don't know. I think it's unfair to say, oh, the Nationals are in trouble. They're not in trouble. They're not in a great spot. But to have a game six scenario going back to Houston, you've taken those first two games in Houston, but you've got Steven Strasburg going for you, who's statistically speaking, one of the greatest postseason pitchers of all time. You can say, oh, he's been on a good run. You can say he's had some good postseason starts in his career. But when you look at it historically, he's one of the greatest of all time. So it's not just a recency bias thing. When you stack him up against other guys, he's one of the greatest of all time to do it in October.
Well, and for Steven Strasburg, I mean, what we saw like leading up to this World Series, even in the early parts of the postseason, was you really saw him sort of like a hyper focus down the stretch. And you could really get the sense that this was a man on a mission. And I don't know if he was being motivated by a lot of the conversation that still gets had when you talk about keeping the training wheels on so far back when, and what was that, 2012 or whatever it was. Like now Steven Strasburg is sort of like that big brother who's coming back home and is ready to show you he's ready to take over dad's business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he means fucking business. So I hate to just jump right into game six without kind of talking about how this entire road series unfolded here. Because what's ridiculous, Carrabas, is that's what it's been. It's been two successful road series between these clubs. The Astros get waxed at home. Are you kidding me?
And one game. One game.
And then they go into D.C. and absolutely pummel the Nats. They literally, there was not a single pitch thrown in which the Houston Astros were in the advantage. There was never a point where you were like, this could go our way. It just, and it was a gut punch, man. It was a real gut punch. Greinke threw well game one. Anibal Sanchez, not so much. Greinke still not getting the length out of him, right? Almost five innings. But again, being able right now to mix and match and match up through the bullpen with the that's how you're going to win these ball games. If you're not going to have a Garrett Cole, Verlander type horse performance out there, that's how you. So Greinke did what he needed to do. The bullpen came in and did what they needed to do. Frankly, this entire series, Jared.
Yeah. I wrote this after game five. I said that game five was really the only game that stuck to the script. Like, we didn't have the Nats going up 2-0 in Houston. After that day off, there was a lot of talk about, well, the Nats might fucking sweep this thing. The Astros look lifeless. And then the Astros come back, win the next two. So to that point, this World Series hasn't stuck to the script at all. But in game five, Garrett Cole comes out, drops his big old dick on the mound, seven innings. Was it two hits? And then they were all in the same, or it might have been three hits. Well, the one run was the Juan Soto homer, the nine strikeouts to tie Cliff Lee for the most strikeouts in a single postseason. That was 2010. Cliff Lee struck out 47 batters. You know, Garrett Cole could still, I mean, would you be all that surprised if there was a game seven scenario and Garrett Cole pitched an inning in that game?
Not at all. Are you kidding me? An inning, Garrett Cole will give you every single out necessary. Yeah. Garrett Cole will tell you, you just go ahead and put me in the ball game when you don't think we're going to need anybody else to come into the ball game. Yeah. And if that's the sixth inning, I don't fucking care. Just make sure that phone rings nice and loud. Make sure they say my name nice and loud. And do me a favor, and won't you send every other arm down here in the bullpen with me? Send them back into the dugout. Why? Because I want to be mobbed by every single one of these bastards when I punch the ticket to send us into the history books, back into the championship driver's seat. That's what Garrett Cole's mindset is. We're talking about a guy in Garrett Cole who is one outing away, essentially, from tying Curt Schilling for the most postseason outings of seven innings and seven punch-outs combined. He's got four of them bad boys. The Big Burrito?
So that's only one start where he didn't do that.
Right. He's got four such starts like that under his belt in this postseason. Curt Schilling in 2001 had five of those type of outings.
Right. And even in the one start game one of the World Series where the Nats were able to hang a five spot on him, still went seven innings. He has not pitched fewer than seven innings in this postseason. So that's obviously a tip of the cap to him. You know what I can see happening? You know what would be a storybook ending to this World Series if you're the Houston Astros? If they do lose game six, after all the bullshit with Roberto Osuna and how the front office handled all that shit, it was a disaster. It was inexcusable. If the Astros were in a position to have Garrett Cole pitch the ninth inning to close out a World Series, and it's not that fuck Roberto Osuna on the mound, if it's Garrett Cole getting those last three outs, that would be a great way for the Astros to cap off a championship season, which I could totally see how that's storybook shit.
Well, you could almost see the Houston Astros trying to figure out a way to avoid maybe having Osuna be the individual on the mound at the very end of it. Like, hey, Garrett Cole, you're right. That would be great storybook. Is there any way that we could run anybody else out there? Presley, what do you got? Anybody? Yeah. Hey, Greinke, you want to go flip a 69-mile-an-hour hammer, see if you get a swing and miss? Fuck it. Is there anybody else? We got a towel boy that we could put in a uni?
Yeah.
Anybody.
Right, so because think about it. Like, you know if the Astros win the World Series and Roberto Osuna is the guy who gets the last out, like, you know that all the national, like, I mean, like, people will talk about the Astros and how great they were, no doubt about it. But you know that, like, the clickbaity shit will all be well, the, you know, the glaring thing after the Astros won the World Series was who was standing on the mound and the price that the Astros had to pay in the PR department to record that final out. Like, that's going to be on all the hot take shows. And I'm not necessarily saying that they're wrong for feeling that way, because it is sort of eye-opening. Like, if you have the Astros win the World Series, and whether it be Game 6 or Game 7, if Roberto Osuna is the guy that's on the mound in the ninth inning and he gets the final out to put another World Series title on the shelf for the Houston Astros, there will be a lot of talk from mainstream media that will be like, yeah, but at what cost? You know, like, you
well, put... and you bet your old boy Taubman, he's probably got the fucking T-shirts ready to print as soon as Osuna is the last guy on the mound, that asshole. He's probably... chomping at the, but you're right, man. You're absolutely right. And that's what's shitty about this. Like I said before, is you hate to be an Astro player that even has to entertain answering a question regarding what either one of these dudes have done, whether it's Osuna and his position or role on the team and how he's thought of, or it's the front office and the impact that that mouth had on your guys's situation right here, right now. So I hope for everybody's sake in the Astros clubhouse, those dudes who strap it on and go out there and have earned the attention and have earned the accolades, I hope they are able to put themselves in a position maybe where, you know what, if you're going to win this thing, goddamn it, do it by five. So do it by seven. So we don't even have to entertain that idea, right? That would be great. And you'd have to bet that with Lunau finally coming forward and facing the music and addressing what should have never happened, which was the attack on the writer, then they are very aware of the temperature of the room right now. And given the opportunity to turn the AC up and turn the temperature down on that ass, they will.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that there's going to be a lot of talk about Houston going into Game 6. But if we've learned anything from this World Series, it's that, you know, momentum is really only as good as your next day's starter. And we're doing a lot of like Astros clinch talk right now. It's not out of the realm of possibility that the Nats could go into Houston and win the next two. Like, that's not
this is as good of a position as you could be in if you're the Nats right now. All things considered, does 3-2 sound good? Nope. Sexy? Probably not. But you've got Strasburg on regular rest. Yep. You would then have Scherzer, should he be able to bounce back from the neck issues, on rest, ready to rock. If not, Anibal Sanchez, ready to rock. You've got Corbin, who, what'd he go, Saturday?
Or he go went Sunday? Saturday.
It's Saturday. So Sunday, off day. Monday, today, off day. That would make tomorrow a bullpen day for Corbin, so you could get some work out of Corbin if necessary. All of this stuff just kind of lines up. Should everything work out, should those quote-unquote kinks in the neck work out, it's not a bad spot to be in, all things considered. This is kind of exactly how you would want it to look if you were the Nats in this boat right now. Yeah. So with all that shit being said, there's really no other direction to point. Like, the game is basically telling you how this is going to go right now, right? Strauss, see you tomorrow. And then Game 7, like Dave Martinez astutely pointed out, and every baseball fan knows, Game 7, if your grandmother has a heartbeat and can drag her oxygen tank out there, her ass is in the lineup, and her ass is hot. Mm.
Like a lot of things, I think sometimes we can get caught up in the moment, especially when it's like the three of us where we're watching all of these games and paying attention to every inning. But if somebody had told you that the Astros would be up 3-2 heading back to Houston and the Nationals would have Strasburg and possibly Scherzer looming, you would say, yeah, that sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like probably how we thought the series would play out without knowing the exact details of how we got here, right? Then three wins by the other team. It's been a whirlwind, but you know, I think we're probably where we thought we would be.
I got to bring this up too, because it's an Astros heavy conversation. And I think we all understand why, because as much as we want to be positive about the outlook and as much as we want to give you folks a reason to be positive, well, it is what it is. The Astros are in the position they're in with Verlander ready to toe the sled. It's not great. But as far as the Nats are concerned, here's a little nugget, Jay Hay. I don't have any power out here, so this nugget was made on a propane grill, not hot out of the oven.
You are a hero. There's no question about this podcast.
Juan Soto, folks. I don't know if you already know, though, but Juan Soto, 3 extra base hits against one Gerrit Cole this postseason. Pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's why it's good. Because Juan Soto's only faced Gerrit Cole 6 times. So in those 6 at-bats, he has accumulated 3 extra base hits. That just so happens to tie the most extra base hits accumulated against Gerrit Cole in the 2019 season in its entirety. He ties Joey Gallo, another lefty, who got to face Gerrit Cole 12 times. So exactly 25% of his at-bats against Gerrit Cole resulted in extra base hits. Juan Soto only needed 6 down.
I mean, you guys, you hinted at this as an Astros heavy conversation. I mean, you know, nobody here is anti-Nats. Some of us here pick the Nats to do very well in this particular postseason, but the facts are what they are. Over the 3 games that spanned basically since the last podcast, they were outscored 19-3, right? 16 runs. Yep. And they went 1-for-21 with runners in scoring position. Like, there's almost nothing to talk about in terms of what went on in the field. Like, I did not look up the stats. Some people had this, but like, it was researched that the 16 run differential over 3 road games is tied for the largest differential in any 3 consecutive road games in any postseason series ever. This was as walloping of a "we've come into your place and like taken your lunch" sort of thing as there really is.
Well, that was the first time postseason. And that was the first time that the Nats had been held to 1 run in each. It was the first time the visiting team had done so in this 2-3-2 format. And this was the first time since 2016 that the Nats were held to 1 run at home in 3 straight games. Been 3 fucking years, and it happened in the World Series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and one name that we haven't even mentioned yet, talking a lot about Strasburg, Justin Verlander is getting the ball for the Astros in Game 6. And obviously the numbers are what they are in the World Series. But for me, it's the same way that like I don't like, you know, when we're talking about the Yankees and the Twins in the division series and the consecutive losses in the postseason and the consecutive losses to the Yankees overall. I mean, obviously the series ended in a sweep. I think it's just because the Yankees were that much better than the Twins. But we're talking about, back in 2004, this and that. It's like, I'm not trying to compare what Johan Santana did to what Berrios could do in this division series in 2019. It just holds no bearings. And I feel like with Verlander, okay, you can look at game 2 of this World Series. Sure, like he struggled in game 2 of the World Series. He even struggled in the ALCS against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. So that, to me, holds more weight than, you know, saying that, you know, Justin Verlander has historically struggled in the World Series. It's a narrative. I just don't know how much stock I'm putting into it. I will put stock in the fact that he did face the Nats lineup and he didn't do that great against them.
You have to put stock in it because there's no denying the numbers in regard to the actual World Series. These are very different, right? Again, World Series, postseason, those are different. Postseason, we're talking cumulative. We're talking DS, CS, series combined. When you take just his World Series performances, we're talking about a guy who's rocking an ERA north of 5.5 over 33 innings. All right. We're talking a guy who's sporting a whip north of 1.2. So this isn't the same guy that you're seeing in the ALCS body of work, where he's slightly north of a 3 ERA with a whip under 1. Those are the differences. And I wonder if people will start to ever have the conversation about Justin Verlander in regards to the World Series specifically, like they do about Clayton Kershaw in the postseason. Mm. Like, is Justin Verlander like that? And I'm just posing that because when I think about the guys in that rotation right now, it's probably still Garrett Cole that I'm handing the ball to, and it's probably still Justin Verlander in this game scenario before it's ever Zach Greinke. So I still would love to believe that with nuts on the line, the trophy at stake here, Justin Verlander is a really good option. The numbers tell you it hasn't been, but maybe I'm not a big numbers guy right
now. Well, his numbers are also outstanding in potential clinchers, too. That's where this stuff gets confusing.
There you go, Jay. Hey.
Yeah, he was awesome in the clincher last year for the Red Sox. I think out of all the storylines that we've sort of talked about in depth, We mulled over one of them, and I really want to hit on it. It's the Max Scherzer storyline, not being able to take the ball in Game 5 against Garrett Cole. And it wasn't a majority, but there were some fucking idiots out there that thought, oh, wow, like, what a pussy. Listen, Max Scherzer lives and breathes competitive baseball. The pain that Max Scherzer must have been in,
he broke his nose,
would have put most people in the hospital. If you can't take the ball in a tied World Series game, that pain must be unimaginable. Also, you have to figure it's probably it's an unselfish act to be like, hey, I don't want to put my team in a position to where I'm going to go out there and get fucking blasted because I can't even wipe my own ass right now. So it's not so much a pain tolerance thing as a, hey, I am in an amount of pain where I don't think that I can perform even at set. Cause you would take a Max Scherzer at 70% over most guys that are available to you in that game. But if he's not even that, then he as a man has to say, listen guys, I would be doing you all, the other 24 guys on this roster, a disservice if I took the mound tonight.
Well, this is what your rotation mates are for. And this is what being a leader is about, is at times you understand the path to victory might not be with you at the front of the line right now, physically. But as far as making the decision to get out of your way, to get out of your team's way and allow things to unfold, you know what? I don't need the ball today. We've got a pretty capable guy in Strasburg on regular rest. He's going to ride. And then when it comes time for Game 7, trust me, Max Scherzer understands that he can rest in the offseason. You will not need to question whether or not Max Scherzer can take the ball. And if, in fact, he finds himself in a place where he can't start the game and give you the kind of effort he wants to give you from start to finish, I promise you Max Scherzer takes the same sort of mindset that a Garrett Cole would in a Game 7, which is you go ahead and make that phone ring when you want this thing mopped up and send everybody else packing, because I'm not coming out of the ball game. If you put me into this ball game, you need to know it's stopping with me. And that's the mentality of a man who is going to have to say no to a start today or tomorrow and make that start Game 7.
Right. Another big thing, tip of the cap to AJ Hinch. He goes with Yordan Alvarez, who was a fucking mannequin in the ALCS. And before the series, we had our picks. Who struggled the most in the NLCS and ALCS? Who do you see breaking out? I like Yordan Alvarez, and he goes 3-for-3, 2-run bomb in Game 5. Tip of the cap to AJ Hinch for, you know, he's basically a DH, but he sticks him out there in left field, and he talks about, you know, we don't expect him to make the flashy plays, but we expect him to make the plays that are just routine, like get the outs that you're supposed to record, and we'll be fine. And he goes 3-for-3, is lifted for a pinch hitter later in the game, but this was sort of we saw what you did during the regular season. Let's see that guy again now. And we saw that guy in Game 5. Astros win big. Correa with the 2-run homer. Springer with the 2-run homer. Fucking George Springer. Anytime you're like, hey, by the way, you should just tell that guy it's the World Series every day. I mean, if you tell George Springer it's the World Series every day, we're not talking about Alex Bregman being able to challenge Mike Trout for the American League MVP. We're talking about Springer. The guy has been fucking outstanding. But who do we like in Game 6? Who do we like in Game 6? Strasburg, Verlander. The series shifts back to Houston, a potential clincher for the Houston Astros? Are we going seven, or is Strasburg doing his thing one more time?
I would love for Strasburg to go out there and do exactly what he wants to do. I would love for the Nats to win this ballgame. Unfortunately, I feel like the momentum coming off of it, because look, you win two on the road, great. You go back home, you get slapped around 3 days in a row in your own living room, and then you're forced to be put on some terrible Amtrak all the way over to somebody else's neighborhood. That's not a great feeling. And that's kind of what this feels like, because that plane ride was not a pleasant one. It was not a pleasant one for the Nationals. All right. As much as you want to be able to put shit in the rear view, and it's not fun, because you're flying across the country realizing this very well could be our last game. We've got business to take care of right now. And as I mentioned about Strasburg coming down the stretch, I feel like he's poised to continue to just sort of be that reliable dude. I don't know that this Nats offense has, it doesn't feel like they have a fight in them. And I don't know why. It just feels like there's certain parts of this lineup. Like I mentioned, I think it was Anthony Rendon that I mentioned that I wanted to see kind of perform, realizing that there might be some guys that they work around. If Rendon's going to be a guy that they work around, who else is going to step up? Well, there really hasn't been anybody.
Jay,
especially over this last three games.
I think we're getting a performance out of Justin Verlander that will go a long way towards us never having to have this silly conversation about his performance in the World Series, as he sends the Astros to their second title in three seasons.
So you think it is over in six games?
I think Steven Strasburg is going to give us a solid performance, and I think Justin Verlander is just going to do him one better.
Mm-hmm. I could totally see that happening, and I will be taking a victory lap with my Astros in six pick. It will be
too then. That would be great. I didn't even know I did that. Yeah, that's great.
Of glory for the people. But I will be very stressed out during game six. High drama, high intensity, very suspenseful, incredibly stressed out watching this game. Dallas, I was wondering if maybe you had a little something for me.
Well, Jared, when I like to relax, you know the deal. Schedule a flight. Wilbur, gentlemen, all aboard. I'm a big CBD guy, Jared. There's no hiding it. There's no denying it. If you don't want to get higher than a kite, if you don't want to get higher than angel testicles, CBD is the route to go. It's not that heady experience. You're not going to feel like you forget it. You're going to forget how to say the ABCs, which, by the way, is a joke. I don't even want to get into that. But CBD MD, they've got it figured out. They've got the relaxation game on lock, especially this new stuff they got, Jared, CBD PM. This stuff blends 500 milligrams of CBD, high-quality CBD, with melatonin, valerian root, chamomile, and other sleep-promoting ingredients to create a sleep aid that's more powerful and effective than a Garrett Cole cheese biscuit. Caribus. I'm just laughing at the phonetic spelling of chamomile. I feel like they might have a have an idea of who does these ad reads here. I have consistently promoted the roll-ons. The roll-ons are the absolute game changer. It's as easy as rolling it on your neck. I got it. I got two herniated discs in my neck. Slap this roller on there and it's good to go. Even a couple drops right before bed underneath the tongue and it's fucking sailing right into dreamland, folks. CBD MD has got you covered. And when you're looking to stock the shelves, like right now, use promo code STARTING9, 25% off your entire purchase of CBD oils. Everything you get from CBD MD, you're going to enter promo code STARTING9, and that's going to get you 25% off everything. Lotions, rubs, oils, tinctures, absolutely everything from CBD MD. STARTING9 is the promo code. That gets you 25% off, folks. Get in your life, and I'm serious. Get on that CBD PM. That shit will knock you out, and you will wake up ready to attack the day.
Love it. Jay, hey.
What's up?
We got to play a little Pepper here, I think.
Yeah, we do.
No, we don't. We got to go to Sean Casey first.
Yeah, it's true.
That is true. I got a little over anxious, got a little over excited. Right. I needed some of that CBDMD first. I'll chill out. I'm going to do the CBDMD. You guys are going to listen to Sean Casey. When we come back, I'm going to chill the fuck out.
Sean Casey, the mayor, MLB Network.
Are we on?
We're on.
We're live. Here we go. Let's
do it. Live. This is your second time on the podcast. You probably don't remember the first time because it wasn't in person. We're gonna make this one very memorable.
Now we're talking.
Make this one memorable. How many All-Star games is this for you?
Three. Oh, I went to three as a player, and this MLB Network, man, this is probably my 10th. So 10 plus 3 is 13.
That's awesome.
Is that right?
That's true.
Is that right?
Yep, I got that.
All right. Nailed it.
Which one has been your favorite so far?
You know what? My favorite All-Star game was my first All-Star game I went to as a player at Fenway.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Okay. 99. I mean, seriously. Right. I was 25 years old. I remember going into the clubhouse, and I was like, Piazza's to my right, McGuire's to my left, Bagwell's behind me. I'm like, what am I doing here? Yeah. You know, I win a contest or something. So, like, it was unbelievable. Then Pedro goes out. Right. He dominated. He was dominant. Just filthy. But the coolest thing was, the All Century team, when those guys came out, and I'd give my video camera to the Bat Boys. Hey, man, make sure when they announce me, just get me like coming out. Right. Hey, that was so cool.
Yeah.
So the coolest thing is, I go back and look at the footage, and he has Ted Williams coming out in his golf cart.
Yeah.
And he's like right here. It's like unbelievable footage. Like just Williams coming up to throw out that first pitch. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And as we're going in to throw out the first pitch with Ted Williams, I get a pat on my shoulder like this, and I'm like, you know, I'm just nervous. It's gonna be, I'm fired up, you know. It's unbelievable. And all of a sudden, I turn, it's George Brett.
Oh,
and he's like, wow. Hey man. He goes, hey man, I just want to introduce myself, George Brett. He said, I really love your swing. I was like, hey, good to meet you. Meet, say, do. I didn't know what to say. It was like the first time in my life I was ever.
What do I do?
I was like, what do I do? Yeah. I was like, you're the greatest. 3,000.
Yeah, they're greatest.
Congrats.
391. That was great. Yeah. I mean, so that was the greatest collection, I think, of living major league talent ever.
All at the same spot. Yeah.
But
yeah.
When you consider like the All Century team plus the All Stars that were on the field that night,
right. Ridiculous.
There's never been a greater collection of living baseball talent ever. No. Ted Williams aside, who was the one guy from that night where you were like, I can't believe I just met that guy?
Oh my gosh. Wow. There's a few. You know what? Well, George Brett walking up was unbelievable.
He's awesome.
You know what? When I was walking in, I think this is really cool too, because a couple years ago on the red carpet, we did the red carpet show. It was Jeter's last All-Star game. Mm-hmm. So they asked Jeter, what's your coolest moment in the big leagues? You know, you're thinking all these World Series. But
yeah.
He goes, the coolest moment I ever had, and it was like one of my coolest moments. He's on the other side of the field. He says, walking up to throw the first pitch out to Ted Williams, he gets a pat on his shoulder, and it's Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He says, and Hank Aaron's like, hey, man, just want to introduce myself. I'm Hank Aaron. That's, I mean, how cool is that? So, like, meeting Hank Aaron, meeting some of those guys, like, for me, that literally, if my career ended the next day after that 99 All-Star game, I was like, what a great career.
Done deal. Well, good here.
It's 25 season.
I'll take it. It's over. We'll see you later, you know?
Yeah. So, how after, like, call it like the third inning, did you have a moment where you're like, thank God I didn't start this game?
Oh, my God. You're nailing some questions here because you're going right into my mind as a 25-year-old. Yeah. So, first off, I have no idea why, but I'm in the dugout with my video camera. I'm like, hey, I'm just video. Who does that? Right. I'm like, why am I in the dugout? Yeah. I just thought you could do it. You're 25. Like, this is cool, right?
Yeah.
So, in the fifth inning, this is when McGuire was just launching balls, right? So everyone wanted to see him play. Now, obviously, I'm the backup first baseman, and Bagwell's DH-ing. So I'm thinking, I'm going to have to go in this game at some point, right? So, and I'm thinking, I'm glad I'm not in there. But so McGuire hits third, his third at bat, and Bruce Bochy's manager's like, hey, where's Casey? And I was like, I'm like in the back behind the, you know, behind
not
the court.
Here. I think he's in the bathroom.
Like, I think he went home.
He's
I think
in
he,
the cage.
I think he left. Yeah, I think he left. So they're like, hey, you're going in. I'm like, oh my gosh. And this is back when Fenway's, yeah, you know, the dirt of Fenway was like, you know, there's still a couple rocks there. Yeah, you're like, okay, I don't think this
pebbly.
Is a big, yeah, it's a little pebbly, you know, it's like back in your high school picking up rocks.
Right.
So I'm like, oh my God, I got to go in. Right. So I'm like, so sure enough, I get in the game and I'm like, you know, and then I turn into like a 12-year-old kid that makes an error. You're like, please don't hit it to me.
All right.
So keep it away from me.
Please don't hit it to me. But obviously, in baseball, when you say that, it's definitely coming.
Ball for sure.
First ball, BJ Surhoff, rocket missile, one hopper, boom, I come up. Oh my God, I caught it. Stepped on first. And that was the moment I was like, all right, I'm good.
Love
good. Yeah.
Was there, what was the thing? Because we've asked some couple guys this, and you being who you are, the status you have within the game, it's always interesting to see what guys like you were excited about before you became the mayor, right?
Right.
So who or what was the thing that you were anticipating that first All-Star game, or maybe ones that came after, where you're like, you know what, I hope it's like this, and oh my God, it was. Holy hell.
Yeah. You know what, I think... So you're talking about in my All-Star experience?
Yeah, in your All-Star experience as a player. Those are things that you're looking forward to. You kind of manifest them in your head, and then you show up, and you're like, oh, my God, that's real.
This is happening. Right. No, I think it was just, you know, because you play against the guys.
Right.
You know, you're out there playing. You're like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, you're playing against, facing Randy Johnson. I'm like, God, this guy's scary, you know? Yeah. And then you're in the clubhouse with him. He's like, hey, man, nice to meet Randy Johnson. I'm like, oh, man, this guy's not as bad as I thought. He's scary, you know, when he's out on the mound. I think one thing about All-Star games, it's just you really become teammates with the guys that you kind of admire playing against. And I think the great thing about an All-Star game is when you leave that, you know, for the rest of your career, you're like, hey, bro, what's up? You know, you had that common bond for 2-3 days, you know, and I think that was really cool. And a big thing for me is I was always a collector growing up. Like, I was like the kid at 14 years old with the table at like the mall.
Sure.
You know, and I'm selling, you know, I'm like, I bought a table for like 20 bucks. I was like, I better sell 20 bucks.
Slinging memorabilia.
Who wants a Jose Canseco Raider rookie? You know what I mean? So, you know, what was cool there is that, you know, they got the trailer, they got a room where you could put all your stuff out and everyone signs it. And this is the one time where, you know, no one's going to give you a hard time because you're an All-Star with them. So you put a dozen balls out there, a bat, your jersey. And the coolest things that I have are the jerseys I got signed at those All-Star games, 3 All-Star games, and they're all hanging up my house. And here's a great story. Another, I don't know why Fenway has all these stories, but so – When you first get there, the club is like, hey, the club sent you 2 jerseys.
Yeah.
Sign one of them for charity and the other one you wear on the game. Oh, it's cool. So I get the Sharpie out. Everyone lines up their jerseys. Boom, I sign Sean Casey real big on the back. No, awesome. So that's on the workout day. So the next day, boom, we come in. I get done with batting practice. I'm coming in to get my jersey on for the game. And I'm like, why is the signed jersey that I signed Humongous the only jersey in my locker?
Oh, no.
And they go, oh, hey, the Cincinnati Reds only sent you 1 jersey. I go, are you serious? He goes, you're going to have to wear that in the game.
No. Yeah,
so if you go back and look at the footage on Fox, I go to go on deck my first time, and Tim McCarver's like, hey, here's Sean Casey. He's having a good year. I think he might have signed his jersey.
That is classic. I thought someone was busting your balls.
Oh, no,
like really messed happened. Him with
it
you.
It really happened. So they zoomed in, and there's this huge signature on the back of my 99 All-Star.
Talk about tasting yourself, Case, huh?
Hey,
jeez.
I'm really cool.
Look
I
at me.
Let me sign my own jersey and then wear it.
I'm a collector of me.
Yeah, I like me. Who do you like?
What year is this?
This is 99. This is FM.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
That is beautiful.
You mentioned Randy Johnson earlier, and this is why I think big leaguers have a screw loose. Because talk about, like, how do you get your heart rate down to a point where you're not about to vomit getting in the batter's box against a guy like that? Because, like, I think about that now. Like, I wouldn't face him as, like, a 46, 47-year-old, whatever he is now. Like, because Dallas, I think, did he go to – we got invited to, like, the Mariners, like, fantasy camp or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, no. I don't want to go. I mean, because I know that he won't let me go and not face Randy Johnson.
Not getting in the box.
So,
absolutely.
I was busy that day. Yeah,
Dallas is going to make you get in there.
Of course. Not doing it. So I would rather just not go than, like, I would rather turn down an opportunity to meet and interview Randy Johnson knowing that
meet
I would
him
have
on
to.
On your own time.
Yes. Right. Yeah, no. I'll Skype him or something. Yeah. So how do you, as a big leaguer, how do you get your heart rate down to where it's like, I'm getting in the box against a guy like Randy Johnson and I'm not going to, like, psych myself out.
You know what? I had a great big league lesson facing Randy Johnson for the first time. I remember we were in Cincinnati. He was with the Diamondbacks when he was fuel. It was like 100, 101, 93-mile-an-hour slider.
Slider.
I'm lefty. Yeah. He's 6'11". I'm like, shouldn't he be playing hoops?
Right.
Why is he throwing 100 to me, right?
Right.
So I go out there, and I think it's my first year in the big leagues, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, what's the game plan against this guy, you know? So I get in there. I get in the box, like, wham, like 101, like outside black, like I'm like, okay, if you're gonna throw 101, shoot it right down the middle where I got a shot. Don't like outside black me where I'm like, I got no shot, right? So it's like, bam, 01, you know, and I'm like, okay, then wow, 93-mile-an-hour slider, then I'm kind of like,
he's melted,
like, jump out of the way,
he's melted.
So I'm like 02, and I'm like, oh my God, and I'm thinking to myself, and the whole time I'm thinking, man, this guy is Randy Johnson, this guy's nasty.
Right.
So sure enough, I get it back to 2-2. and I started feeling a little comfortable, and I'm foul. I must have fouled off five balls. He comes up to get the ball, and he's getting closer and closer to me, and he snatches the ball, and he kind of looks at me, and I'm like, oh my God, I just want this about to end. Like, I don't care. I don't even want to hit, right? So I know grounding out the second. You know, I go to first, I'm like, thank God I'm out. It's my favorite out ever.
Thank God I'm out.
But I think back this, and I thought to myself, because I remember facing Greg Maddux the first time and think, yeah. Oh, there's Greg Maddux. I was like, he sliced and diced me over 4-2 punch-outs. I'm like, if I keep thinking.
That wasn't fun.
Yeah, I'm like, this is terrible. But I was like, if I keep thinking that Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux, all these guys, I got their cards and I was collecting them, I was like, I'm going to be at the big leagues in a year.
Right?
So I because of those bats against those guys, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to play a new game with myself. When anyone releases the ball, it's now a pitching machine, right?
Yeah.
So now it's just the ball, and I just need to hit that. I'm not hitting him. I'm not hitting Maddux. I'm not hitting Johnson. I just got to find a way to hit that ball, and that helped me a ton. But that at-bat versus Johnson, that, boom, knocked me into the spirit world. You know?
That was unbelievable.
Well, you've had the opportunity to cover multiple All-Star games. Obviously, you've been a part of them. What have you seen change about the presentation of the game itself?
Yeah.
And do you think we are getting it right with the way things are going, especially with the Home Run Derby, something that I feel is by far and away the best exhibition of talent in the four major sports during their respective All-Star weekends?
Yeah.
The Derby is sexy.
It is sexy, isn't it? I love it. You know, Tony Petitti, who was started MLB Network, is now a big part of Major League Baseball with Rob Manfred. Mm-hmm. And I know he was kind of a big brainchild of trying to do the Home Run Derby and the way they're doing it now. And now they're adding $1 million. No wonder, like,
that helps.
You know, those guys, I'm in, Alonzo. Yeah. I'm in, I'll make $500,000. Let's, get it from Mel. So I love the way they're doing it now. I think they're trying, I think Major League Baseball has realized maybe they've been a little behind promoting the game, the young players, and now people are tuning in. It's getting exciting. It's getting a little bit younger. And I love the format, too. It's
great. Awesome.
You know,
it's
phenomenal. Nothing like seeing a guy hit 30 home runs, like, you know, and you're like, okay, all right, then he goes and hit.
Right.
So I think it's the format's great. And I think they're doing a great job of really promoting the game and the social media and all that stuff. So, yeah, I love the setup for the Derby tonight. It's going to be great.
Nickname the Mayor. That comes from talking to guys at first base, chatting guys up.
Right.
Is there anyone that just straight up told you to stop talking to
me? I got a couple of those stories. They're like, this guy's annoying. You know what's funny? When I first got to the big leagues, he didn't tell me to shut up, but when I first got to the big leagues, like the third week there, you remember Henry Rodriguez?
Yes.
So Henry Rodriguez, back when he played in Montreal, he'd hit a bomb and they'd throw the O Henry bars, right?
Yes.
I'm like, I always thought that was really cool, right?
Yeah.
So I'm up there and I'm holding guys on it, and I was asking for so many signatures too. I was like, hey, bro, you send the ball over. You know what I mean? So I'm holding on Henry Rodriguez. There's a guy named Ron Valone on the mound, big rig. And I'm just up in the big leagues. So I don't know, he's a lefty, right? So I don't know his move yet. You know, you gotta get to know each other. So I'm holding on Henry Rodriguez. He just singles, and I say, hey, man. I really love it when you homer in Montreal. They throw those O Henry bars in the field. And, like, he turns to me like, oh, thanks, man. Right when he turns, Ron Valone steps off, bam, picks over. I'm like, pop. I'm holding the ball. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing, bro. It's my third week in the big league.
Wow, so savvy.
So I'm like, tag him out. He looks at me like, really, dude? I'm like, I swear. I'm just so excited to be here. I thought I just wanted to get a quick conversation in.
You're like trying to lay the groundwork for maybe a future relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to let you know.
Right. I was like so uncomfortable.
That was not planned.
I was like,
I'm sorry, but I gotta do this.
I gotta touch you because now if I don't, I'm gonna have real problems.
So just hold off on that ball. Maybe next time around.
Next time.
Did you ever have a conversation with him afterwards to like explain that to him?
I think I might have, man.
Playing.
I was like, my bad. Like, I'm so sorry. Don't even talk to me anymore. I was like, when you get on first, don't talk to me.
Who's the best first base conversationalist?
Lance Berkman was the best.
Yeah.
Puma was the best because he wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is
really.
Oh, this is great, dude. Yeah. Berkman gets on. I got to know his family. You know, I got to know his kids. How are your kids? How's everybody doing? You know, so when Berkman got on, seriously, I thought there was times I was like, Berk, we need to like stop talking because people are like, what are they talking about? Like, if it was like, you know, if 12 pitch a bat, you know, if you got a leadoff knock, he's there for like 10 minutes. Right. I'm like, you want to go to dinner tonight? Maybe come over. And one time he did come over for a barbecue because of a first base conversation.
Really?
I'm like, hey, my wife's throwing a barbecue tomorrow. If you want to come over, he's like, oh, cool. It's like, all right, I'll pick you up at the hotel.
Love it.
I mean, it does make perfect sense. Like, Berkman was never going anywhere.
He wasn't going anywhere, and he raked. I mean, what a great guy, too. And a quick note on Berkman.
Yeah.
look at Edgar Martinez's stats, which no doubt deserving to be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Go look at Lance Berkman's stats and put them together.
Yeah,
I'm
really?
Just saying.
Well, you play the player A, player B game, right? Yeah.
Right,
faceless. And
right,
just look
right.
At the numbers.
I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. Check it out. And you know, Berkman played a little first base, played some outfield and stuff. He was one of the best players I ever played against.
So, last question to kind of wrap this up, bring it full circle here. Yeah. The All-Star game, the Home Run Derby. I feel like we've had this discussion in general on this podcast a billion times about the face of baseball and people sort of wanting to force Mike Trout into that role because he's the best player. I kind of go back and I look at a guy like Ken Griffey Jr., who, by the way, I was like 10 feet away from yesterday. I was freaking out.
Yeah.
I
played with him for 6 years. It was pretty fun.
Freaking out.
Yeah, Jared locks up when stuff like that happens. Yeah. Like we were
like,
in spring training.
I don't know what
I'm saying. We were in spring
training. That moment.
Yeah,
well, we were in spring training, and Ricky Henderson, like Jared loves Ricky Henderson,
dude,
right?
Yeah.
And you know, Ricky's just so damn cool.
Oh,
so
Ricky wants to hear about how much people love Ricky. And I was like, sign me up. I volunteer.
So we're in the dugout, and I go up. I'm like, hey, Rick, I got a buddy who loves you. And Jared was just like standing there. like usually there's
paralyzed.
Some mechanics.
I took my glasses
to this, you know?
Off.
But yeah, he was just like. And I was like, this is Jared. He really likes you. Jared, this is Ricky Henderson.
So
greatest leadoff hitter of all time. And Jared's like, you're my favorite player.
I love you. I was telling him about like
clam job.
Christmas 2011. I was like, dude, I got your World Series jersey for Christmas. Like, I wear it to bed sometimes.
That's not weird, right?
Oh, no, that's not weird at all.
No, it's like, real.
That's totally normal. It would be weird if we were like around the same age. I feel
right,
like
right, right, because you're a little younger. Right,
yeah.
Right.
I feel like when you're like younger and it's like those guys, like Griffey made his major league debut the day that I was born.
Oh, really? No wonder you love the guy.
I love him. Love him. So to that point, though, like everyone trying to force Mike Trout into like the face of baseball thing, when Griffey was the face of baseball, he wasn't the best player in baseball. So you don't have to – like I don't know why everyone gets on Mike Trout. Be the face of baseball. You don't have to be the best player to be the face.
Right.
Who do you think right now is the face of baseball? And do you think that like the Home Run Derby is one of the best tools to sort of create – the face of baseball?
I think it definitely helps because I think a lot of, like Dallas was saying, I think a lot of people are really loving this format. I think we're getting more people to tune into to the Derby. You know, obviously Trout, man, just what a special player. But man, I think of Bellinger. I mean, Bellinger could be that guy that's the face of baseball. Acuna out in Atlanta, man. Yeah. I mean, talk about special pop, just like exuberance. Javi Baez.
Yeah,
I mean, dude, just – I mean, I get the chills.
Love
just
me some Javi,
just
dude.
Love watching him Javi. Play the game. Like, I would tell my kids, you want to see how to play the game? Just watch the Cubs and watch Javi Baez, how he plays the game in all facets and how excited he is and the passion that he has. So I think baseball is in a great place as far as young talent goes, as far as those faces. I think we've kind of tried to force, hey, Trout's the guy. Now I think you're starting to have some legit guys that are really, hey, man, these guys can be the face of the game just because they're great players.
I mean, like, look at a guy like Aaron Judge. You know, he goes into Miami, that Home Run Derby, and everyone was talking about, like, half a season in. Like, that's the face of baseball. Like, look at him. Like, he's built like a superhero, and he hits like a superhero.
And he is,
look at Alex Bregman. He's another guy that could,
dude,
that could
Bregman,
also take that.
Love Bregman. That piece you guys did on Bregman was so good. And I was thinking to myself, when we do demos in Studio 42 at MLB Network, I'm like, I have to use a bat because it's so hard to hit with a wiffle ball bat.
Because
you got some bat speed. It's so whippy. And the guy could throw it. I'm swinging and missing.
Right.
Uh-huh. For Bregman to cover that ball, the way that was unbelievable, and that was a nasty pitch, and he wham! I thought that was awesome.
Dallas has this like queued up, ready to go.
Oh no, no, I'm gonna find it. I thought that was so cool.
You know how people use the app like Headspace to like go to sleep at night? Dallas watches the video of the Bregman home run.
It was so good. It couldn't have been. It was great TV.
We'll just watch it here together.
Yeah.
I mean, it was gas.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Yeah, let me give you the volume kick because it really just doesn't do it justice.
Yeah, no, it's so good.
If you can't actually hear.
I feel like
and I think one thing you love about it is Bregman's personality.
He just stares at the camera.
Yeah, it's so good. Here it is. Hey, you know you're good when it's loud off the wiffle ball. That's when you know you're good.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable.
And it had to go that way, right? There's no other way it could go.
I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect for that to happen.
It was and beautiful. Then Dallas just screaming in the
I was a little excited.
Would you expect anything less? Would you expect anything less?
I mean, come on. No one's expecting that, right? I would have loved to have seen it, but it happened. So kind of like that All-Star game question, like, what do you see happening here? I see Alex Bregman hitting this ball 7,000 feet.
It happened. Boom.
Oh my God! Yeah. It just did that.
It's literally up there with like Giants win the pennant.
Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. He crushed it! He crushed it! Oh my God!
Unbelievable. Sean Casey, MLB Network. You're welcome around these parts anytime.
Oh, dude, I love you.
I don't think I've ever laughed that hard during an interview in my life.
I love what you guys do. I love following you guys.
Hell much
yeah.
love, man.
Appreciate
much love.
It. Yeah,
always got a seat here at the mayor.
Thank you. You love
Hell
it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, big thanks to Sean Casey. Shout out MLB Network. They're always great with us for giving us access to their guys. Again, one of the funniest interviews I think we've ever done. Probably the funniest. Definitely the one that I laughed at the most. I think it is now time to play Pepper.
It is.
Jay Hay.
Yeah, there's some... It's been, you know, not always a lot of news around this time in the World Series. They discourage this kind of stuff, but we've got some. We've got some. First one, let's get the transactions out of the way first. Jared, I'll toss this to you. Red Sox officially announced and hired Mr. Bloom, Chaim Bloom, I believe it is.
Chaim
Bloom. Bless you. As their chief baseball officer, the new best title in the game.
We are making shit up, Jay Hay.
Yeah, what's your 60-second take on the new Bloom for the Red Sox?
So I did some digging on the guy. I also had some former Rays players reach out to speak highly of him. You know, this is a guy. I mean, I watched the entire 45-minute press conference today. Came away from that very impressed. I found it interesting that the Red Sox admitted that he was the only guy that they interviewed. I think, you know, the negative Nancys will say, oh, well, the Red Sox didn't do a thorough enough search. Or you can be a glass half full guy and say he was that impressive and he checked all the boxes that they needed for the Red Sox to be like, hey, this is our guy. Obviously, the Rays front office has been ahead of the curve in a lot of ways. I think that Bloom has been a big part of that, being the SVP of baseball operations over there. I think that the fact that he's 36 is another interesting. I mean, obviously, he's going to draw comparisons to Theo Epstein, who I believe was like 28 when he was the interim GM in 2002 with Mike Port. So I kind of look at this as not so much an experiment, more just like the Red Sox are joining the times, you know, like they don't have to be this, you know, super experience, because he doesn't have a ton of experience. Yeah. But I think if you have, you know, 3 years of experience with the Tampa Bay Rays, a front office that a lot of other organizations wish they could be, take a $60 million payroll to the postseason. I think that for what he did in Tampa, not that he's going to be asked to build a winner with a $60 million budget, but I think that was one of the things that the former Rays player said was, it's going to be interesting to see what he can do given, you know, his style, his background, but with, you know, the John Henry's checkbook, so to speak. I thought he came off great in the presser, very well spoken. He didn't hide from, you know, he didn't give non-answers. He didn't come off as a robot, which I hate in press conferences, is when, you know, players, coaches, managers, executives give these robotic answers that were, you could tell, were rehearsed or anything like that. He gave honest, genuine, transparent answers to the questions. So yeah, I came away from that being pretty excited about the future.
This is a perfect time to tell you guys my joke that I made up. I made this joke up, oh, probably 7 years ago or so. Well, hold on. 1918, 1917, 1915, 1914. Yeah, I was rehabbing. Oddly enough, I was rehabbing, pro rehabber. What is the alcoholic rabbi's favorite drink? You're gonna love it. Tell me when you're ready. You ready?
Heineken.
A vodka and L'Chaim.
Both of those are terrible.
That's fucking awesome.
I feel like both answers play.
Come on, a vodka and L'Chaim? Vodka and L'Chaim, please. Heineken? I mean, that. Yeah.
No,
you're in a good mood now, but Dallas, I have some terrible news.
Uh-oh.
I have some very sad news. I'm so sorry to have to report this.
What is it?
The Pirates have fired Neil Huntington.
No.
I'm going to turn this over to you first. It's touchy, I know, but
some might feel like these were stormy skies ahead for the pirate ship, right? And I can understand why some indecisiveness might be looming right now. You figure, hey, you're the guy, right? September, you're our guy. Well, he's not our guy. So he's not our guy.
I had the over-under for Pirates puns in Dallas's rant was set at the second and a half sentence, and I hit the under in the first sentence. So continue.
No, I mean, it's just what a weird situation they got going on over there. I mean, well, it's actually not weird. It's just they've totally cleaned house. Everybody's out. Frank Coonley's out, the president. Neil Huntington's out. Glenn Hurdle's out.
So let's go. So let's go.
A lot
go.
Of the staff's out. So.
And you know who's looming? Old Who? Banny. Old Banny Rooster. That's right. Bannister. Wouldn't mind hanging around. Wouldn't mind being the leader of that ship. And I know there might be some eye rolls. Guy that left Tech. I know there might be some questions around that, but when you think about creating culture or you think about stripping it down, at some point in time, you have to find a place within the organization that you're going to have some sort of consistency, some sort. And if the front office, the place where the decisions are coming from, isn't going to be that place, can we at least make the field of play a place where there can be some consistency? Is there anybody around here that can provide that? Bannister? Probably. So if there's anything moving forward to, I don't know if being excited about it is maybe the way to say it. But
no,
if
there's nothing to be excited about.
If there's anything to maybe be positive about or have your glass look half full, maybe it's that. Maybe it's that. Cole Tucker, also another good reason to be excited.
Shout out Cole Tucker.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
Yeah, great dude.
What are you talking about?
What's your...
Cole Tucker had like a 500 OPS.
Hey, you know what? We're talking about the future, Jay. Hey, we're the future, okay. My friend.
All right.
And that's where the...
Cold shower coming for the people of Pittsburgh.
That's all right. This was a warm one for him, like a golden shower.
Larry Rothschild. See ya. He's out.
I was surprised. I mean, like, I guess... the Yankee fans that I saw reacting to this were happy about this. They said that this was kind of like an overdue decision. I don't know. I mean, I hate when if you think the guy did a bad job for multiple years, sure, whatever, like move on, bring in your guy. Obviously, he preceded Aaron Boone. But when there has to be a fall guy, like the same thing happened with the Red Sox and Dana Lavangi. It's like, all right, you guys, your pitching staff sucked this year, so you fire the pitching coach. All right, well, they had a great pitching staff the year before, and it was the same fucking guys. You know, you look at the Yankees, and it's like, okay, and the Yankees pitching was not an issue in the postseason. Say whatever you want about the pitching staff during the regular season, but maybe it's just because they didn't really address the rotation whatsoever besides James Paxton, and even that was a roll of the dice because he had never – I mean, this is a guy that could never stay healthy in his career. I haven't looked at the numbers. Was this the most innings that he pitched in a season ever?
I don't know. I can look. To me, it's not a fall guy situation. To me, like you touched on at the very beginning, it's that he preceded Aaron Boone, and that I'm sure that at this point there are people with some more current and progressive ideas on what pitching at the major league level should be and how that should be coached and managed and impacted than Larry Rothschild at this point. Like, to me, it's just like, it's just a new voice sort of situation. It's a, you weren't necessarily my guy, but keeping you on to transition from the previous administration was probably not a terrible idea. He threw 150 and two thirds innings this year. That is his second most behind last year. But if you factor in the postseason pitching, still wasn't his. No, it was his most. It was his most. 150, 164 innings, most.
And
ever.
He still had DL stints. So that's, I mean, it's an incomplete job by Brian Cashman, and maybe the move was right to not give up pieces of a potential future for a Marcus Stroman who didn't do well with the Mets or whatever other options there were out there at the time. And they had their end of the year press conference. And he was going back and forth with one of the reporters about, you know, oh, you guys didn't do anything. So, well, you know, we did make an offer to Patrick Corbin. We did throw a package together for Gerrit Cole when he was with Pittsburgh. So it's not like they didn't try. They just didn't succeed.
Yeah. Sad note to end the podcast on. There's already the buzzards are circling. The Dodgers are expected to pursue Francisco Lindor this offseason.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean...
I'm sure they are.
That doesn't necessarily mean that Seager is out of there.
I don't give a shit about Corey Seager.
Just a little, that's not who you're talking about, Jay Hay. That's not the shortstop that we're considering right now?
Corey Seager can play catcher if they get Francisco Lindor. I don't... Who cares?
Man.
That is
there's probably a lot of fans. How many over under on how many Lindor jersey burning videos we're gonna get?
I mean, I hope zero. Well, yeah, I mean, I'll be a part. I'll say this: I will not be a part of promoting any of those.
Yeah. Why would you ever? I mean,
not that I have anything. I mean, I don't get to decide what goes on the S9 or Barstool accounts, but I wouldn't be happy to see that. Jersey burning is lame.
It's very lame. I feel like
I tell you what's not
lame. What
Jersey removal. Are we just going to act like that didn't happen? Are we just
what do you mean?
Talk about that?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to act.
Yeah. Like, no, that's a better way to end the podcast. Let's move on from Lindor.
Yeah.
Jersey removal. Go ahead.
Shout out to the four boobs sitting behind.
Oh.
Home. Ow. 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 Sitting behind.
Where you're going with that.
Home plate. I mean, I don't know that this is the place to promote what they're doing. And if I'm being completely honest, it's just because I don't know the name of the magazine or I don't know the name of the individuals.
According to them, they were promoting like breast cancer awareness or something
which I'm totally okay with. Totally get it. And if you really do sit and think about it, a massive double standard that our friend Kate at Barstool, go read her blog. It's got a lot to do with helicoptering your piece out there for game six. I'm not saying that I want to physically see it myself, but I'm saying I wouldn't mind a hero, if you know what I mean. Yeah. It's unfair. It's unfair that women do not get to settle into the bleachers at Wrigley the same way maybe Big Cat once did in his glory days. They don't have the ability to do it. They can't do it. And that's a double standard. And I'm not here for it, Jared.
Based on her social media posts today, they will no longer be able to do that at Major League Baseball ballparks moving forward.
Yeah. I feel like that's going to be very tough to enforce.
Yeah. That's actually impossible to enforce when you think about it. Because guess what? You don't show an ID at the front gate. And unless the lady or man or whoever that's taking your ticket for, I promise you, minimum wage, or is a like a volunteer because they're like 107, they're not remembering your face, and I don't think they can legally ask to see your boobs. So there's probably not a very solid way to be able to identify you as you enter the game or the ballpark, just a ticket.
No, but it would be trespassing. So there are legal ramifications if they.
Yeah, we're not endorsing this.
No, I'm just telling you, you're probably in the clear. If you want to catch a Tuesday game like White Sox Royals, you're probably good to go. Or actually, that could be a bad place to go.
Yeah, see,
might be
one of 15 people in the ballpark.
I didn't want to say it, Jay Hay, you dick.
Yeah, it's also a sad state of what's going on with the Cleveland Indians when Dallas started talking about we're talking about Francisco Lindor, and he said jersey removal, and I was like, wow, damn, they took his fucking jersey out of the stores already. Like, that's fucked up.
That's so quick. Sad.
Quick hook, all Frankie Lindor.
Yeah, they're just like they're 75% off in the stores, and he's not even traded yet. Not great.
Kind of like those jerseys, 75% off. Holla.
Hey-o. Do we have any final thoughts this evening before we head into game six of the 2019 World Series?
Soak it up while it's here. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I feel like this is
by
regardless
Thursday,
of
shit's going to be gone.
Yeah. Like regardless of what happens in game six, I feel like we're probably not going to record again until the baseball season is officially over. So if there is a game seven, we would not have another podcast after game six before game seven.
Yep. Yeah. And I'll say this, Grounds Crew. If you are a member of the Grounds Crew within, I say an hour right now. I don't mean that tomorrow. I probably mean closer to a half hour. If you are within a half hour of the city of Simi Valley and you are not on fire and the roads are not blocked because of fire and you actually have power, DM me. I'd love to watch the baseball game with you.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not going to bring my family. I'll leave them at home. I'll leave them in the dark with candlelight. I love them, but it's the World Series. And I'll bring some snacks. So
yeah.
I just need a place to watch the game. I would prefer a gnat-friendly sanctuary just to kind of keep those vibes going, you know? So if you're in the greater Simi Valley area, who knows? DM me. Let's get it cracking. I'll fly over there. Me, Orville, Wilbur.
Well, worst case, Dallas, and I know that you'd probably have to be in like a car to keep your phone charged. I'll FaceTime you and I'll flip my phone around to show the game and you can just watch on FaceTime through my phone and then we can talk about it as it's happening.
That is always a very realistic possibility, my friend, because as we set right now, as the sun starts to set, I'm going to have to go outside and pitch a tent in the backyard. Nothing sexual, so that we can camp outside in the backyard. That's right, sweetheart. No, we can't do anything fun with lights on because we're living in Armageddon. Tough
you
break.
You should move, Dallas.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I feel like that option's on the table. You know,
I'm ready to do it.
What are you thinking?
I think somewhere like if you're facing the map, like if you go right from California.
Mm-hmm.
If you go right, there's a nice little desert out there. Play a lot of baseball in that desert out there. I'm a huge fan. I have property in Arizona. We are landowners in Arizona.
Wow. speaking of Arizona,
why don't you come on out here to Norwalk and the sheriff of Norwalk carve you out a nice little piece of land for you and the missus? All right.
I mean, does it come with my own fucking moonshine distillery with that kind of accent?
Yeah, I don't think anybody has ever talked like that in the state of Connecticut ever.
No.
I mean, if you're pitching me a 401k plan under the table, yeah, I'm good. Like, do I get a seat at the table with billions? I'm in.
That was my generic sheriff voice. Jared, you said, speaking of Arizona.
Yeah, speaking of Arizona, I was at game four of the World Series in D.C., and I went over to the Fox Sports booth, and this is the first time that I ever met Dontrell Willis live.
Oh, the trade.
He was with Johnny Gomes, a dear friend of mine, and both live in Arizona. And I was I knew that we have gone too far when I go to introduce myself to a World Series legend in Dontrell Willis, and he only referred to me as Rocket. Did not call me Jared, did not call me Carabas. He only called me Rocket, which I loved, but I know that now we have just officially gone too far.
Well, it is what it is. I told you, Jared. I told you. We're here to remember when I told you so 2 years ago or a year. Star is born.
Yeah.
Star is born. And here we are, my friend.
Yeah.
I'm on the deep end, just watching you shine, watching it. You're like a shiny little striper coming right out of the bay, swimming upstream, hooked on a topwater plug. I'm going to fillet you and eat you from the ass first, but it was a good life.
It was a great life. It's a great life. That's it from us. We will be back on Thursday-ish. Assuming Dallas is able to. He's living in Armageddon out there in California. Dallas, stay safe. We'll get you the World Series Championship podcast as quickly as we can once a winner is crowned. Enjoy the rest of what we have in this 2019 baseball season. It was a great year. Thank you all for listening. We will be going back to one podcast a week for the off season. So this is the last week of two podcasts. So thank you again for listening. It was an awesome year for us from a content standpoint. Started with spikes up in spring training, went to our first All-Star game together, more road cities than we've ever done before. And we look forward to taking it into the offseason where Dallas and I, Jay Hay, if you can, we're not done. There's baseball to be talked about. There's baseball to be seen. There's interviews to be had in the offseason. We're going to keep you seam heads sane when there is no baseball on your television screens. We will bring it to you here on Starting Nine. So thank you for sticking with us this season. Enjoy the rest of the World Series, and we'll be back on Thursday.
That's right. We could have an international schedule for you folks across this offseason. We've talked heavily about winter ball, kicking the tires on going down under. Little OZ baseball for you. You just never know. Wiggle!
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.